ist Roy.
Das ist Roy.
Hallo und willkommen.
Yeah, so with that, let's get started. So ladies and gentlemen, we have the very famous Nicholas Stringfield here in this vlog. Very spontaneous vlog, actually. We just met up in Cape Town. It was not planned. I did not know that you were coming here, nor did you know that I'm coming. So I'm very glad we made this happen. Nicholas Stringfield, for those who don't know him, so if you're from Germany, you've probably heard about him. You have over 200,000 subscribers on YouTube. Been on all the TV shows. Nicholas studied in Cambridge, the University of Cambridge Computer Science. So he did the undergrads in Hamburg in Germany, if I'm not mistaken, passing with flying flowers, and later working on in Meta, or Facebook as it was called back then. Then you left Facebook in a very interesting way, partially because of the YouTube channel, right? Now I started working for Master School, which is a really cool startup that raised over $100 million and joined them as a VP. And well, now I think we can also talk about what just happened recently. You're no longer in Master School, and I actually don't know yet what happened. So this is something I just found out moments ago, so I'm super excited to talk about that. But let's get started with why are we in South Africa, actually?
Well, we both attended this incredible, not festival, but burn. And we could talk about that later if you like, because you called it a festival. And I always thought it's a technicality. But now that I lived this really, through this incredible one-week experience, which transformed my life, literally. It was life-changing for the past week. I know it's a burn, not a festival. It's a very, very, very special type of event. And we both went. It's Burning Man Regional in South Africa. It's, I believe, the largest one after the one, the original one in Nevada.
Yeah.
And it's Africa Burn, and then the third would be Mid-Burning Israel, which we wanted to. My girlfriend, who's sitting in the background, maybe doing a spontaneous or impromptu conversations or not. But yeah, we wanted to go to Mid-Burn. She didn't get a visa because she's Turkish and they were striking and all sorts of things.
Nah.
Yeah, now we said we have to go to Africa Burn instead, which was the best decision of my life. And then very funny, when I made an Instagram story from Cape Town, you said, wait, what? I'm in Cape Town. I'm coming
Cape
with
Town.
Alexander, who I also know and I worked with, and like, very, very funny. We never got to meet, though, at the burn. We never met up because there was no internet connection, and we did find each other.
Yes, that was so weird. So you sent me the license plate and picture of your car, and I actually spent a good 40 minutes walking around searching for a car. There are 10,000 people, so you can imagine it's a bit hard to do that. And I did not find you. I saw so many cars look identical to yours, just a different license plate. At some point, I was like, okay, I'm going to spontaneously run into you. But that did not happen. Or maybe we did, like, we're very close, but in the darkness with all the costumes.
It'd be funny if I ended up being in somewhere in your vlog in the background.
In the background shots. You can watch my vlog, and maybe you see Nicholas Stringfield, you can identify his face somewhere.
Yeah, I hope it's not doing the burn of the clan. Were you filming that?
I was not supposed to know. I was not filming that. What happened there?
Do you know where I could be?
Oh, you were one of these people.
Did you see the big bird?
Yes, I did.
And did you see there were like people running around it naked?
Completely naked?
Yeah, that was one.
You were one of them. That's so cool.
So,
okay, we're going to
talk about that. Yeah.
You're going to come back to that.
Please blow my penis.
Yes, I will.
And my face. No, I'm kidding. Do what I mean. Like, but then I've never been there. Let's, what are you going to talk about?
Let's do some of the more related, like the topics that are more related to my channel. So I'm really curious about your studies. You studied in Cambridge. I currently live in the fake Cambridge, which is...
It is the fake Cambridge.
It is the fake Cambridge. You went to the original Cambridge. I went to Harvard and MIT. I'm really curious to hear about what your studies were like in Cambridge. How did you end up there? And what it really makes is the difference. Like, what do you... If you could go back in time, would you go to the U.S. rather, but sit to Harvard, or would you still choose the U.K.?
Oh, interesting. I mean, I haven't been, right? I mean, I love the U.S. I think if I had to choose just one country to live in, it would probably be the United States, actually. The only thing that's bad about the States is that it's so far from Europe.
Yeah.
All my relationships with, like, friends, family, girlfriend, everything is in Europe, and there you can just take a two-hour train from London, you're in Paris. Which is something I'd miss. But in terms of country, I would definitely study at some point in the United States, and something like Harvard or MIT sounds fantastic. Generally, I was happy studying my bachelor's degree at the Barry Wollner University, which was the University of Hamburg, not elite or prestigious in Kent Hall. I had a good time. Would I choose it again? Well, you know, people always say I would do all the same again because they are happy where they ended up, which is great.
Yeah.
But I think it's a bit of a poor answer, right? I mean, I'm happy where I am now, but still, if I would give it, well, if I were to give advice, I'd say getting in the work is really prestigious at Harvard. It's super cool, not because they do better teaching, but just because they are so selective that the peer group is just insane, right? And you know this, and you show this on your blog, that it's just a very different vibe because the selection is so strong. Although occasionally people also sneak it without selection, which is what ended. I actually got into Cambridge.
What do you mean sneaked in? You're so smart.
I sneaked into Cambridge. I didn't pass the Cambridge interviews. It's pretty tough to get into the bachelor's. You have to go there, you have to actually spend a few days, you have to do these really, really difficult questions with fellows at the college. And I got into Trinity College, Cambridge, which is kind of like, it's like a creme de la creme, right? Yeah. It's like within Cambridge. When I went there in 2015, I think they dropped a lot since, but in 2015, Cambridge was number one in maths, worldwide.
Yeah.
Trinity College is number one within Cambridge for maths.
Yeah.
I sneaked it. And how did I do it? It was an amazing, amazing serendipity, really. I had this scholarship. I had the scholarship called the Studienstiftung des Deutschen Volkes, the German National Academic Foundation.
Which is also how we met.
Which is how we met there before, I'm saying. We met at one of the language courses in France. And they, at the time, had an informal collaboration with Trinity College Cambridge. So informal that it wasn't even announced anywhere.
I don't know. Yeah.
That's the thing about the German Studienstiftung, that they have all sorts of official partners. But then there are these unofficial partners. They're not in the intranet, in the Daedalus net, on their website, but you just have to know the right people. Oh. So I was attending, as a computer science student in Hamburg, I was attending a graph theory seminar with the mathematics faculty for fun. It was part of my bachelor's degree. And I did a decent job in that seminar. The professor liked me, and then he came to me and said, "You have the Studienstiftung scholarship. You should go to Cambridge." And I was like, "How does he know? How does he know I have the scholarship?" Well, just before the seminar, he went to see a colleague, and this was a professor who I worked for as a student tutor, and who also wrote my recommendation letter for the Studienstiftung to extend my scholarship. And then, as this professor Diestes, his name, very famous graph theorist, put his sheet of attendance on the table in this other professor's cabinet, in his office, he would be like, "Oh, Niklas Steinfeld, I know this guy, he's good. How do you know him?" "Oh, I wrote the recommendation for the stewardship." Just because this guy, at that time, put the sheet of paper, the list of attendance, on this other professor's desk, he came to me, he knew I had the scholarship, he talked to me about Cambridge. He used to be a professor at Cambridge, he's still a fellow, he studied there as well. And he told me I should go and study the part two of the Mathematical Triplets, which is the third year of the bachelor's degree in maths at Cambridge University, as a visitor. And I was like, "Oh, I've never heard about that collaboration. I will think that's it." And he was like, "There's this guy in the studio, write an email." I wrote an email, and he was like, "Yeah, that's true. We have a relationship with Trinity College. Send me your CV, just as a PDF." "Yeah, just as a PDF." I sent it. And a week later, Cambridge, the admissions office, called Professor Diestes in Hamburg. They called him on the phone, they're like, "There's this guy, should we take him?" And he said, "Yeah, take him."
And that's it?
And that's how I got into Cambridge.
Wow, okay, this is an incredible story. I mean,
yeah.
The normal way is, like, obviously you apply, then the abnormal way, at least in the US, is you have some super rich parents who make a little donation of a few million dollars, and that's how he gets in. This is something that I haven't heard yet. This is, like, really incredible. I managed to pull that off. But then you actually got into a master's degree program.
I did regularly apply to the master's degree program, yes.
Yeah, so you got admitted like in full normal way.
Yes, so I spent 1 year at Cambridge as a visitor. Even though I had completed my bachelor's degree in computer science, I did third year bachelor's degree in maths. Mm-hmm. And then I loved it. I mean, Cambridge is an insane place. Insane. So, so good. And then I wanted to stay. I had to stay. So I was like, "Okay, I'm going to do a master's, which is 1 year." So I did. I stayed for another year, but applied regularly this time. I got admitted, and it was funny because I kind of applied as an external student because I wasn't a regular Cambridge student. I was a visitor, so I was like, "I did my master's degree at Hamburg, which was a selected external application. Did all the master's degree application just in the kind of last field, kind of anything you want to add. Also, oh, by the way, I'm already dead. Right, so it was weird. They even made me do an English test, which I hadn't done for my first year, right? It was really weird. Like, so I was in Cambridge, I was studying, and then to apply for the master's, I had to do an IELTS. So I went to the IELTS test center.
They made me do that.
I went to the admissions office first. I complained. I was like, I'm here, I'm standing in front of you, clearly speaking English. My supervisors can give you like a letter, and this kind of
stamp for language.
So I didn't need an English test to get into Cambridge, but I needed one to stay there.
That was just funny. Yeah. Absolute. Sometimes bureaucracy is really fascinating.
But it worked out. Yeah. I was going to magical years in this Harry Potter place. And
how's it like to be there?
Oh, it's I mean, if you put into Google Trinity College Cambridge Great Hall, it really does look like the Great Hall in Harry Potter. When I read Harry Potter, I thought Great Hall is like a Hogwarts term. Mm-hmm. But it's just a normal term in Cambridge, Oxford, right? Every college is a Great Hall. And I think the US also, like some of these prestigious universities, copied this system and this vibe, right? And the colleges are kind of like houses. Everyone knows St. John's is Slytherin, and the Trinity, unfortunately, will be Ravenclaw. And, I suppose Gryffindor would be Jesus College, in my opinion, and Hufflepuff is Homerton. I don't know if any Kentabs, as we call them, and fellow Cambridge students in the comment section. But you can see, kind of, it's such a, just like these US universities, Cambridge, they have their own terminology, they have their own English words. There's such a weird, close society, but very magical once you get it. Very magical. It's very Harry Potter vibe. I mean, I remember so distinctly my admissions dinner. You walk into the Great Hall, Trinity College, you see Henry VIII, right? Portraits everywhere. You have four long tables for the students with benches to sit on, like the four houses in Harry Potter. And then you have a high table for the professor. And I was like, wow, this just looks exactly like Hogwarts. And add in the feeling that Isaac Newton was just like me. I'm eating my porridge here for breakfast. Isaac Newton was eating his porridge in that very hall every morning. And it's an incredible spirit. It's an incredible vibe.
But I have this feeling. I have a feeling always when I go into Harvard, but in the library, they also have this big wall, like the study hall. And just sitting there knowing that I think 8 U.S. presidents have sat in these exact same chairs in the years, you know, before me and have been studying there. It's just inspirational in some way.
Yeah.
Just think like, wow, I'm sitting here and I might be able to accomplish that too in some way.
Yeah, I guess so. Although, US president, you have to be born in the US.
Well, yeah, I mean,
suppose we all done that one, but great thinkers have wandered through these halls, and it's magic. It's very inspiring.
Yeah. Absolutely. What do you think about studying computer science? Should people try to study computer science as opposed to, you know, some very theoretical things such as I did physics? Because I personally regret studying physics, actually. I'm wondering, would you say the people who are, you know, skilled for it and are good at it should usually pick computer science?
Yeah, it's funny because there's this kind of hierarchy of purity, right? And the purer the subject is, kind of people tend to almost look down on the more applied stuff. Yeah. So I studied pure mathematics at Cambridge. By the way, I didn't do computer science. The 2 years at Cambridge were a complete excursion for my computer science career. I was doing like graph theory, I was even doing logic and set theory.
Oh wow, okay, that's extreme. Yeah.
Not useful by any means if you're not pursuing an academic career, right? So it was very much not applied, not even applied maths. It was pure. And the purists, they've been like, oh, this is like the real deal. This is reality. I do have to say that I self-identify as a computer scientist, and I went back to computer science afterwards, and I worked as a software engineer, and I did not pursue an academic career. And for me, that's the right thing to do. I love building, I love doing things in the real world. I wouldn't want to do an academic career anyway, even though originally for a long time I thought that would be my thing. I love teaching, and I like this kind of grandeur that comes with this academic title, being a professor. It's very nice. But I feel that I really like trying different things.
Yeah.
And if I had to choose going very deeply into one topic or learning a little bit about many things, I would always choose that.
It's more exciting.
I'm much more of a generalist, and academia is just not very generalist friendly. What gets rewarded is going super, super, super narrow and finding this tiny new thing that no one's found before, but
probably isn't that big of a deal, right?
You might do something big, of course. Some people do something really big, which gets like But chances are you're working on some very, very, very small, narrow part in a subfield of a subfield of a subfield.
Yeah.
Isn't for me. And I'm also so much of an extrovert, so just spending 90% of my time like kind of reading books and researching, it wasn't the right thing for me. And kind of with a similar logic, what I love about computer science is that it has this like academic part, and I actually did direct computer science for my bachelor's degree as well as a focus, and I did a lot of algorithms, and my thesis was about model checking, and it was very theoretical. But then I ended up working as a software engineer, and then I ended up working in business development, and I mean, now I'm a YouTuber, and the computer science background is super useful in all of these.
It gives you a lot
much more so than a pure mathematics degree.
Yeah.
So I think computer science is a safer bet if you feel like you're interested in different things, but in the end of the day, people should study what they enjoy most.
Because actually, okay, this is something where I want to push back as all this. People studying what they enjoyed. I enjoyed physics the most, so I studied physics. But I would always say, chances are you're going to change over time. You know, fields change, your personality changes, and just because maybe you like one thing slightly more than the other thing, unless in my case, I preferred physics slightly over computer science. I decided to do physics, not taking into account that actually computer science gives me so much flexibility, whereas physics, it's kind of, you know, it just goes in one direction. You have to be razor sharp focused. So I would say, yes, if somebody says, okay, physics is all I love, or you know, something very niche, then do that, pursue that, and you're gonna be great at it. But if you're like unsure and have like multiple things that you want to do, I think a good advice is pick something that is very practical. It gives you the flexibility, because sooner or later you're gonna want to switch your career in some way anyways.
But you can anyway. I mean,
you know,
look, you're a startup founder. Despite your physics degree, right, it didn't really hold you back that much. And we're talking about an undergrad choice, right? Maybe PhD is too much. Maybe for you it was like, maybe it wasn't the right choice, right? Maybe you were after something that wasn't what you wanted. But I think university shouldn't just be a job education. It shouldn't just be training to be this specific role. I think that's a very old-fashioned view of viewing it.
Yeah.
A very way of viewing it. So I think it's fine to study physics and then work as an investment banker, right?
You do that.
I mean, I'm German, and in Germany, there's this, I would say there's even more of a bias to like study one thing and then become a certain role, a certain job. In the US, it's actually, isn't it already pretty generic? Like there's a lot of like, you study all sorts of things, and then it's fairly normal to pursue a career in something else. So I think it's fine if you just go for a bachelor's degree that you like. I have a friend who studied history, now he's a lawyer. I studied computer science, now I'm not a computer scientist in my job.
Yeah.
I think it's fine. Of course, I also, what I meant by study what you want or what you enjoy is like, study a thing that you enjoy. I totally agree, if you have this very slight preference, but something else seems much more practical, sure, that's fine. Yeah. I just don't believe in doing like a business degree because you want to make money, but you really hate business. I don't think it makes sense. Yeah,
you have to follow
your energy, you have to follow your passion. I was in the same boat. I mean, I had a long list of things I could have studied. And probably I slightly preferred philosophy over computer science.
Okay.
I probably would have chosen philosophy out of pure interest.
For me, it was also on top of the list.
But then I was like, okay, I could do a philosophy degree, then work as a taxi driver and study computer science. But I could also study computer science first and then work as a software engineer and study philosophy.
Yeah.
Which I didn't end up doing, but I attended some philosophy lectures as part of my computer science degree. So do something that you enjoy, that's for sure. Yeah. And maybe you can choose number two or number three on your list. But even there, like, you can do almost anything. So definitely a bachelor's degree isn't going to close off. I strongly believe it. So
that's true. Yeah. Yeah, there's a joke that if you study philosophy, you know, you're gonna end up having the only option to be a philosophy teacher. It's essentially, university is kind of a giant pyramid scheme, just keeps you inside, and you train more new people to study philosophy. But obviously, it's kind of just a joke.
Yeah.
You mentioned the U.S. just now, and I wanna point out one thing that I'm not exactly sure if I'm quoting you directly. You said the only thing I don't like about America is that it's far away from Europe. I think people would really push back on that. I mean, there's a lot of things wrong with the U.S., right? You could very easily think of point that, you know, health insurance, you know, bad education if you don't have money, inequality, and all these things. Do you really see, how do you see the US at the moment compared to Europe and the UK?
Oh, I mean, it's so tough because every country is kind of broken. And I must say over the past few years, and this would throw us into in a huge spiral of other topics. I'm not the biggest fan of governments lately. And maybe this last week of being in this burn and this kind of anarchy, if-based society has strengthened that further. But I'm not a very happy taxpayer, I'm going to be sad. And there's no country where I'm like, oh, this is such a great country. I love the laws and I love that they don't allow me to purchase psychedelics in the supermarket. We can talk about that later. I think there's so much wrong.
There's some laughing in the background.
There's so much live audience. You can always join us on the sofa. I'm not in the laid back vibe of this podcast though. But you can pick bad things into things about income.
For sure.
I like that the US is quite a big country. It is a reasonably weak state compared to some European countries. And if you are more on the state critical side like I am, you like that vibe.
Yeah.
I like the convenience. I like the size. I like the relative pro-business nature of things. The healthcare system's rubbish, for sure. I mean, it could be better. If you don't have money, yes. Yeah. The whole university system is a bit weird, right? Like, people are paying, absurd amounts of money, and then...
getting a philosophy degree.
getting a philosophy degree. The amount of credit card debt. Sure, they're bad things, but then it's not... I mean, look at the United Kingdom. I mean, look at Brexit. Look at... how the European countries have been striving to navigate the past few years. And you find broken things.
You do. And I think the US, they make it very easy to finger point at the issues. You know, yes. I could just give you a bullet list of things that are wrong.
Yeah.
But if I have to explain what is wrong with Germany, I have to essentially make a whole YouTube video, which I did, by the way, about why Germans are often very... you know, narrow-minded. They don't, they don't encourage you to do something crazy. I have it with my family. I don't know how you feel about it. You know, for them, it's like, okay, you study physics, you're going to become a physicist, and, you know, that's what you have to focus on. And one thing, you don't do crazy stuff on the side.
And that's why we don't have any that we don't do meaningful innovation in Germany. That's right. I mean, we happily order on Amazon and we order stuff from Amazon and we drive around in Ubers and we go to eat at McDonald's or go to the next Starbucks or use Apple products and we benefit from all of the innovation coming out of the United States, and then they're like, oh, poor people can't afford healthcare, and oh, look how weird they are about this, and then all the Americans, bloody Americans. What has Germany done in the past few decades? I mean, not that much, really, frankly. So, of course, if you don't do much, if you don't risk much, if you don't have much output, if you're the best internet connection you can find in some central parts of Hamburg is in the has to be measured in kilobits, then sure, maybe you're also less vulnerable to criticism. I'll be very careful as a country like Germany to sit on high.
Yeah, I think particularly the German side is very opposed to kind of this US mindset. I mean, the countries are obviously great allies, no doubt about that. It's just this whole mindset, you know, in the US, I feel like people encourage you to do something. You know, if you do something crazy, they're not just going to say, oh, yeah, what are the risks? Are you sure you want to do that? They're going to be like, oh, that's cool. You're doing something crazy, starting a YouTube channel. This is cool. I like them. You're different.
Yeah.
Or you're starting a startup. You're taking a risk. That's good. And if you fail, you know, it doesn't matter. You try again.
Yeah.
But I feel like in Germany, it's like, you start a startup, like, are you sure it's dangerous to do that? Don't you just want to focus on your career? And then if you fail, which is likely to happen, they're going to be like, yeah, I told you so, you failed. And if you make a lot of money, then they're going to be like, oh yeah, you have this, you're spending so much money on your house, you're spending way too much money. It makes you look like a bad person.
Yeah, I wouldn't even consider starting a business in Germany. I have to say, it's just not an option. And it's not light, it's just about business. And,
for sure.
We used to write good books and compose good symphonies.
He used to.
But even that these days, I mean, come on. I love my country, and I love going back all the time. But and there are good people there. But again, I'm just saying we should be very careful to just kind of blame the US for this, for that. That it'd be hard to make a case that Germany is a better country than the United States. Very difficult case.
Yeah.
Very difficult case. What even is a good country? Good things and bad things, wherever and whenever you it's.
Yeah, and also just to clarify, I seen the same way. I like Germany, actually. I think, you know, people live good lives there. You don't have to be an ex-tech startup person to, you know, be a good person and have a good life. No doubt about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so why don't we actually talk about the really burning topic that I want to talk about. Africa Bird. No, actually, let's talk about, before we move on to that, let's talk about what happened with master school. So you started, you know, a big change in the beginning of this year. Or was it the last year? You left Facebook, made a lot of really cool videos about it. So they're all in German, but I can link them if you understand the German. And then you went to master school, a startup with a lot of funding, everything super hot. And just before this, suddenly Alexander tells me, oh yeah, Niklas is not visible in master school internal system. I'm like, what? Did he just leave? Is it a technical error? So he actually left. What happened?
I left, yes. And I will have announced it when this is out. So it's an interesting kind of development, because I did join just in January last year, and it has been an amazing ride. I mean, mm-hmm. The startup world, as you know, is so exciting, and being master school is in a very unique position in this market. They raised $100 million seed round.
Wait, how's that even possible?
So, exactly, that's what everyone says. It might be the biggest ever seed round in education. It's massive. I mean, Google at Master School Seed, it's a very, very big seed round, and they have also just closed a lot of debt financing, and things are going very well. And $100 million seed was unlikely then, it's impossible now, right, in this market.
Yeah.
And
I joined
at a wonderful time because I joined with a lot of equity and a high salary. Which is normally you try to go for one, and I was making more money than I was at Facebook, kind of basically as much as I would have made at Facebook if I had continued. Which is a lot of money. We had like $300,000. I was just spending about salaries. So, for those interested, is in the US, it's even more, of course, if you work as a software engineer.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You can make like half a million. After a couple of years, but. It's a very good salary, and in a startup, it's insane. And I was given a lot of responsibility. I was leading the business development. I was leading really interesting initiatives. Because I appreciate him so much, but I had the best boss you can imagine. It was incredible. Bunch of things. First of all, last year was one of the most exciting and transformative years of my life. It was also the one that felt the least healthy and the most stressful. I was ill all the time. Probably once a month at least, I had like severe cold, some kind of flu feeling. I had to cancel PT sessions left and right. I was in all sorts of problems, back pain. And I was feeling stressed, and I was just doing too much. I mean, I was going hard on the YouTube channel. I was really trying to push. I was going hard in master school, you know, at the start it was very hectic. And then even in my free time, I was working out in the gym, hoping to achieve the Samuel Bosch body one day. And then when I was going, I was like, oh, I have free time, I go out clubbing, but then going to like techno raves or take ecstasy pills isn't really also kind of the type of balancing relaxation that maybe your body requires.
I right? need a vacation from that.
You need a vacation from those vacations. And I was just living life and working and playing and all of that a lot. And I sadly had to come to the realization that maybe it is too much. It was hard to accept because, you know, I was like 28 at the time.
Talk
in German in the other podcast episode we recorded earlier a bit about this, like from 18 to 28. Sadly, even though both are young ages, was a noticeable difference. Also, it was so too much. My body's just telling me no, and then it's like making you ill, so you do less, right? And I went to Latin America. I had a wonderful
3-week break from everything. We went to Tulum, we went to Brazil, we went to all sorts of places, and had a magical time, and it wasn't working. And this kind of gave me time to pause, and I was like, fuck, I feel the happiest I've ever been in the past year. And I was like, well, I went back to London, I got ill. And I was like, this can't be it. I mean, you know, of course I want to achieve big dreams and I want to build something, I want to have a big career, but am I sacrificing too much?
And you were still working for master's school.
I was registered to take master's school, so it's a vacation. So I was in this kind of plot of deceit, and then I just had to face reality. The reality was, YouTube was feeling like a missed opportunity. Like the whole content creation, the whole businesses that I could build around the B2C startups, right? It was just, YouTube isn't just a YouTube channel. It's like, have a YouTube channel, have a podcast, do be on TikTok, write a book, start a B2C business. And that felt like a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Right? Doing my own thing felt like a missed opportunity, because doing it as a hobby, I managed to build something that would finance my living expenses, that grew into like a business and a lot of subscribers. But it felt much, much, much more than it could be if I went full time. And then at the same time, being in a strategic position and an ambitious startup is also something that you can't read half of, right?
Yeah.
And I'm pretty deal. It was just a clash, and I had to choose one. And financially, even though YouTube is making money at the time, with my equity, with my salary, with everything, master school seemed like the safer and better bet. Most of my income, more than 50%, was from master school. But my energy and my passion was driving me to do my own thing.
Yeah.
And having the best boss in the world seemed still worse than having no boss at all and doing your own thing. And I just had to fix that. And I set myself a deadline. I had this trip to Tel Aviv. And I went to Tel Aviv, and about this time I had to decide. And then I decided, and I went to my boss and I told him, I get more energy out of my own business and my social media activities, and I want to pursue that full time. And he thought about the effect, and he said, if that's what gives you energy, everything else is a waste of time, and you should focus on it. And he's a great guy, and really I appreciate his guidance so much. And he encouraged me and said, you should do it. And I jumped, and I would have announced that really purely for the sake of this complete freedom in my planning, complete self-reliance, independence, building my own business, and the general want to do maybe 80% of how much of what I've been doing last year,
mm-hmm.
but relatively much more on the YouTube side. I left, and I'm now a full-time content creator.
Oh, wow.
Although, again, I don't like to say I'm just a YouTuber. And we talked about this earlier. It's tricky, because also you made this really good point. You put your finger in the wound in the German part, as you're saying, well, the problem if you only do YouTube is kind of this, like, it's this self-referential thing, right? There are a lot of kind of creators, they're kind of talking about how they're a creator, and it's like there's nothing else. And this is something that does bore me, and I'm like, isn't the interesting part about myself this, like, software engineer at Facebook, VP at master school, and like the other things I do so I can document something? And I guess what gives me hope are two things. First of all, I do seem to retain at least a certain decent minimum audience, whatever I talk about. So there is enough interest in kind of how I explain things and how I talk about things. So that's nice. Second, I'm not going to lose my career background. So I can always talk about that part. And I still have the vast majority of my audience actually quite interested in school, studying, entering the job world. And this is something that my content is going to focus on quite a lot, right? So this whole journey of like a university degrees, you go abroad, maybe you join a big corporate, maybe you work in a startup. And that part, I've done it. And I'm not just an influencer who's famous for being famous. I'm not this, sort of this Kardashian style of influence.
Yeah.
But there is something that was achieved, at least in the past.
Yeah, and then you're still the same person.
I'm the same person going forward. There'll be new things. I mean, there'll be a startup. There'll be a book. There'll be all sorts of things. So I'm excited about that. For the next few months, I'm just going to be making content. But I'm also going to be releasing digital products and all sorts of things. So I'm super excited.
So what really comes next? So when did you actually quit your job officially?
Officially, so April was my last month. Yes, and I actually
from now is May 1st.
Yeah, so I only even worked for the first 2 weeks of it. So I just got my 2 days ago. So I got my last salary, which was the April salary.
Oh, really? That's interesting. So you decided to leave, go to Africa, burn, which we're going to talk about in a moment.
Yeah, which was such good timing as well, right?
Yes, that was very convenient timing. Much more convenient for you than for me.
Yeah.
Because I was not in the time when I should have done this, but we'll get to that. Are you scared of what is going to come next?
100%. It is a much less stable income. It's a much less stable workflow, right? It's so tempting to go to Africa, burn like events all the time.
Yes.
There's no boss that you're pissing off. There's no one telling you what to do, which is nice, but there's also no one telling you what to do. You know, yeah. It's like, there isn't that guidance, there isn't that structure. You have to create all the structure yourself. That's scary. You are then quite dependent on a proprietary platform, right? What if YouTube deals my channel? What if they change the algorithm? What if interest moves on? What if everyone saw TikTok, but my content doesn't really work out on TikTok, right? What if I'm not thinking that a lot of things can go wrong? I guess, at least in the next year or two, it shouldn't be so hard to find a new job again, right? It might not be as good a job, and that is a worry, right? I had a spectacular job, and the economy has changed, and it'd be hard to get the same deal again. So I wouldn't be on the streets. I'd find a decent job with my biography. But there's definitely a risk that I've taken. But every investor also knows that risk equals opportunity, right?
Yeah.
I mean, risk and the versatility is what makes a potential opportunity and the returns. So mostly I'm excited. I wouldn't say worried, but of course there's certain apprehension. There's a little bit of anxiety of like, what is? And there's only so much runway that I have, right, personally. And there's no stable salary. And what if they sponsor someone like me? But first of all, I'm going to scale things a lot. I'm going to make a lot of more content. Then I'm going to release some digital products, right? The next natural step is to do some.
Are you going to have merch? Because 10 fights should.
I think merch and the goal and the
standard version of Lassie.
Alexander, would you buy it?
You're right first.
I will get Alexander the merchandise he deserves, but I think the golden days of merchandise are over, sadly. Otherwise, I'd love the Nicholas Stiffert printed hoodie. But I'll be thinking more. I think digital products like Notion templates, online courses, I'm quite excited. I would love to make some apps. And that sounds very old fashioned, but for example, the flashcard apps that I've been recommending, they could be so much better. So I'm definitely going to make something better. And they are, like everyone, have a million startup ideas. And if you go to the B2C market, you have a decent sized audience. It's a very good head start. I would love to write a book eventually. So I have all sorts of things. And as we talked also earlier in German, focus is important. And my main focus right now is just to make more content. And I will kind of carry myself through the next 3 months to mostly just YouTube sponsorships and that sort of stuff, and just kind of enjoy making content, because I also really do enjoy it. Like, I love making videos, right? And being able to just dedicate all my time into making the best content possible is amazing, right? That I'm able to do that. Long-term growth, just making videos, just culture, is hard, it's tough. It's
it can't be it.
So
YouTuber reaches kind of a peak, and after that.
Oh, and my channel's popped, and that's scary. My channel's past its peak, right? I had more views a year ago than now. So that's scary.
It's sad for me. My channel is really at a very, very low at the moment.
Yes. I totally feel that. And it's a complete leap of faith. But it's just what I truly and deeply want to do. And I really think you have to follow your energy. Although it is completely not working. It is like just, you can't pay your bills. Then what gives you energy is just something that no one appreciates at all. You might have to tweak it a little bit, but it's in a good enough place that it seems like a decent move. And who knows, maybe in a year we'll be talking about our best decision ever, even on the financial side.
Who knows? Yeah, anything could happen. I mean, if you're at some point interested, I mean, my co-founders and I are raising money at the moment, so I know there are many opportunities there as well.
Let's talk.
How do you feel about the whole stress thing? I mean, instead of the fact that you quite a lot. Don't you think that you will have the stress now again, just because, you know, the YouTube has to work it out and, you know, I have to make money? That's just a different form of stress.
It could. I suppose, I mean, stress is very subjective, right? And I think it's not so much about how much time you spend, it's also how many things revolve in your head. And doing these very different things and conflicts which all the time, because there's between this employee mindset, the master school, and the entrepreneur, YouTuber, self-employed mindset, that was very difficult. So just having this swarming world, which is my own business, which can come in all sorts of forms and shapes, but like doing my own thing, I think that itself makes it easier.
Yeah.
And right now, I'm so drawn to it, and it gives me so much energy that even if I end up spending more time, it will feel as stressful. But it's something you have to constantly check in on, and I do think that you have to accept your limits, you have to appreciate them, you have to try to build efficient routines. But if you are constantly stressed, and like you said you were, you probably have to change something.
You can.
It does require a lot of introspection, because life is a marathon indeed, right? But it's not a sprint, and you have to enjoy the journey. Goals don't make people happy. They don't. And I said this earlier, it's like you're always at the bottom of the exponential curve. If you get to the top, you're at the bottom again. It's timeless distribution. Your viewers are nerds, so they understand. And it just doesn't make people happy, right? Master School raised $100 million seed round. Do you think this makes the CEO happy? The CEO?
He's taking a course next thing.
Made him happy for it then.
Yeah.
Right? You open a bottle. Done. Although they don't drink. Because just like the first, a different thing. But it doesn't make you happy. You have to enjoy what you're doing right now. It's such a dangerous trap to be like, oh, but I'm investing now. My returns are going to come in 6 months.
Yeah.
Or in a year. Or in 5 years. I don't believe in that at all. And I think the key in life is to find a balance. Find a balance between investing in your future and enjoying the moment. And we just indeed had this 1 week of purely enjoying the moment. At least for me, you were creating some love, but I was renewed. I wasn't like working, you know, I wasn't thinking more than 5 minutes ahead. Getting this better. I was living. I was so present. And I now want to retain some of that. And I want to find this balance. I want to carve out these sacred times every single week to enjoy life. And to have that downtime and slow down as well. Not just go in party, yes, definitely, but also slow down. And I do believe that it's achievable, and that if we feel like, oh, those 8-9 hours a day aren't enough to achieve my dreams, you're probably not just on working smarty. And just trying to keep putting gas to the engine and trying to force things, and then feeling stressed out all the time, and then maybe sacrificing some of the golden years of your life isn't the right approach.
For sure. I said earlier, let's talk about a burning topic. When I realized the burning topic was, well, you're quitting master school. Well, let's talk about the literally burning topic, which is, so we said it already earlier, yeah, we didn't meet up here. We just coincidentally went here at the same time to the Burns, which is, for those who don't know, it's a regional event of Burning Man. So I described it already early in a German podcast, but essentially it's in the middle of a desert, be it Nevada, Israel, or South Africa. A bunch of people, you know, meet up. It can be 10,000 people in case of Africa. I think Burning Man is like 60, 70,000. And really in the middle of nowhere, there's literally nothing. They build up a whole city of craziness. I can't describe it in any other way. Everyone is dressed weird. And there was one guy who was dressed like normally, and it looked so weird and out of place in that though. Whole situation. It is such an interesting experience. So you were there for the whole week.
Yes.
I was the only nature. I think I didn't really immerse myself into the whole Burning Man burn experience. I think I want to go again next year in the US. Yeah. I want to do that differently. But can you describe me what was going on for the whole week?
Yeah, I mean, crazy town really, really hits the nail on the head. And I mean, you do quickly get the feeling that everyone's mad. And the right way to immerse yourself is also just becoming a bit mad and really letting go of all those kind of norms and structures that normally fill your life. And people the way people start immersing themselves in this general madness is by dressing up, really, right? Why do we dress up? Because it says, I don't follow norms, right? And then Finally, if you're a zombie, you're kind of like the odd one off. And people would wear like you go half naked or completely naked. You wear like fancy kimonos and like very exotic things or very sexy things or silly things or like funny hats. I was there. There was a guy walking around dressed as a mushroom, giving all magic mushrooms to people. The beanie as well. And myself, we can put some pictures of your costume.
Yeah,
my costume, which I told you all that. So you dress up. And this dressing up already kind of puts you in a certain mindset of silliness.
Yeah.
Right. And then, obviously, people do get quite intoxicated. But even when you aren't, you can put yourself into this playful mindset, which because what drugs really do, and even alcohol does, and I mean, alcohol is quite an underestimated drug, is it puts you in the moment and makes you, forces your brain to be present. And this can be a good thing and a bad thing, by the way. If you are in a happy place and you drink alcohol, you have partying, and you don't think about tomorrow, might mean you might make decisions that you regret about.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you don't plan, because it disables your planning, it just makes you present, you're in the moment. If you're feeling bad and you have very dark thoughts and you drink alcohol, it could make it worse, right? And people are crying over a bottle of wine because it switches off this idea that tomorrow might be better.
Yeah,
and that soul present in the bad spot, right? This presence can be created through substances. It can also be just recreated or retained through a certain just mindset. And what it means is you walk around and you're not thinking about what am I going to do tomorrow. There are sorts of events, and that there are these steam camps, and they do yoga sessions, and they give out food at a certain time. Everything's gift based. There are no food trucks. You can't use money. But I didn't even follow any schedules. I had my girlfriend, who is in the background, I had her put my phone to a different time, to some rubbish time zone. So if I accidentally glanced at the stream because I was taking a picture, I wouldn't know the time. During the entire week, I didn't know the time of day. I live by the calendar. I'm all in Ali Abdaal, Thomas Frank, all of these things. I make videos about Notion, about time blocking, about Pomodoro technique, right? I'm a productivity YouTuber. And my whole day, I live by the calendar. And I do think that this can actually free you in a way because you don't have to think, well, what am I missing, right? What am I not thinking about? In a way, the loop, I felt like the you go full circle at this burn because just like when I have everything planned out and I'm on top of my work and everything is structured, I don't have to worry that I'm forgetting something.
Yeah.
Last week, I also didn't have to worry about forgetting anything because there were no plans. There were no responsibilities. None of the time I had anything that was planned more than an hour in advance. I just lived and flowed. And there's this kind of sense almost of destiny. As I said, we were destined to meet. When you're on the playa, they call it the playa, it's like the part of the desert where the burn is happening. The playa kind of leads you. And you make all these random encounters and you walk around. Then I kind of have this feeling, oh, let's go this direction. And then I decide, oh, maybe tonight we do X, Y, Z. And suddenly you sit down in a camp and there's this, it was this guy called the White Lion. And he sits down with us and he says, I'm a wheat farmer. I grow my own wheat in South Africa and it's seeded and all of that, by the way. And he gave us an edible. And this edible just kicked us out of the park. It was like so strong. And I went down this deep, deep, deep edible trip. And then, next day you wake up at the other side of the burn where you're not normally camping. And you suddenly wake up there and like loud voices and there's this African ceremony going on. And there are like drums and screams. And there are all sorts of things around you. And you're like, wow, this is interesting. I'm going to join in. And then at some point you decide to wander off. And you're like, oh, someone's offering free coffee. Okay, let me have a coffee. And then suddenly you run into an interesting person. Mad, just like everyone else. Mm-hmm. But also free, right? And it leads you to a new experience. And it's really funny because this idea of madness equaling freedom is not a new one. I mean, very famously, Nietzsche, I don't know if you read his Der tolle Mensch, right? Which is where he's proclaiming that God is dead, quite famously. And it's this guy who's like, completely mad and running around in the town square and go shouting, God is dead. And he looks mad to everyone else. And then there's this question raised, is he the mad one or are they the mad one? So what is madness? And it's quite funny how people who if someone were to not obey the norms of society, not wear clothes, do something, say something inappropriate, we consider that weird or mad. So in a way, the freedom and the madness go along the same spectrum, and it's a wonderful experience, especially when you're someone who's very structured,
yeah,
very much kind of climbing the ladders of that we build in our society, and you're suddenly reduced to these childish rules. And you're like, oh, that looks interesting. There's something colorful. Let me go and let me look at. And that was very much my state of mind for the past week. And obviously, then there are all sorts of things that they've learned. It's about electronic music, which is also a lot about flow, right? Progressive music, techno house is something I got to appreciate a lot over the past year. And it puts you into this flow state, and you party, and you forget what time it is. And yeah, it's.
I had this feeling though with the music. It's on mainstream music, really. Like, rarely would I hear some song that I would recognize. Usually it was just like.
Yeah.
It was even funny, like, it became like white noise to me. Like, when I was up here for the first night, I was suddenly like, I missed that beat. I need that.
Yes.
Sleep properly.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I get a voice.
It's like the beating off the drum.
Exactly. All the time. Like, 24/7.
Basically.
Yeah. And, it's a somewhat like white noise, because if you sleep in a silent room and with other people, someone moves or you know, something cracks, like, it wakes you up. But here, it's like, it just hears.
Oh, but that's also because the bass trail is farther, right?
It's so very far, yeah.
If you're far away, you just hear the bass. That's normal.
Yeah.
But I don't know what music you listen to, but obviously it wasn't popular. It was progressive, which it was techno, it was house, which is something that I never appreciate, by the way. Like, this lady over there in the back, probably not on camera, made me appreciate. I had this enlightenment last year when I, for the first time, started to appreciate techno. I was always the guy saying, I want to go to a club where I can sing the lyrics.
Yeah, I loved that.
Yes, I was like this. 100%. Honestly. Because any of my older friends, I never got the techno. I was like, it just beat it. What is this? That's not exciting. When's the chorus coming? I want to sing the lyrics, right? I want that, like, Justin Bieber in the club. And I still appreciate Justin Bieber, great musician, but I really got to appreciate techno music. And it's just a you have to enter a completely different mindset. You have to not kind of expect the next part of the song or when's the chorus lyrics. It is the loop. It's loop-based music. It's flow. And you kind of, it's like drum. Say someone else drumming, right? And you kind of, you're waving and you're riding the waves, you're flowing. And it's a different way of dancing. It's a different way of listening to this music. But once you kind of get it, and yes, some of these substances help you get it, we can talk about it. But once you get it, even, I can go to a rave. I went to Berlin when Miss Monique was playing. I danced for 2 hours. And the dancing looks more like this, right? You're just kind of like going back and forth and you're flowing. I was stone sober. It's not like you have to take something. Well, I didn't drink, I didn't think anything. I was stone sober. I love this music so much at this point. I'm pursuing becoming a DJ myself. I do have, like, for your viewers, Niklas Stiefel, all the content is in German, but there is a channel, Niklas Stiefel Music, which is not in German, so in any language.
My first start acting, making
music. And, DJing just at this point, not really producing, but I will produce. And I feel that this music it fits the event a lot, because it's all about just letting go and letting it flow, and not when is the chorus, when is it coming, when does it end, do I know this song? No, just enjoy the beeping of the drums, be reduced to your raw animal origins, you know, like Africa is such a good place, like it's where we're all from, and then you have some of these tribal ceremonies going on. We can talk about the burning with the clan and why are we running naked about the fire.
Oh, so, Richard Dawkins said that we are Africans.
We definitely all have the very same African grandmother and grandmother. There's one woman that we all date back to. So, yeah.
So, let's just do the burning question.
Yeah.
Don't you have to be on drugs and join us?
You don't, absolutely not. I had Nils Hoffmann, who was a quite successful house producer in Germany. He was never takes drugs. A lot of DJs don't take drugs because they're doing it all the time, so it just wouldn't work.
It would be horrible.
And it helps. So there are certain drugs that work very well with this music. They work well with other music as well, but they can help you understand and feel this music. And I had the same, it was such an enlightenment. So I took an ecstasy pill in Paris at a techno rave for the first time. I had tried an MDMA before, but not with techno. And I was like, oh my God, this feels so good. I was kind of like, I suddenly got it. And then I went back to London. And then the Monday after this weekend, I was like, wait a minute, let me put on that music. And I went into my Spotify and I put on the very music that was played in the rave. And I was like, oh my God, I like this. And I didn't like it before. My girlfriend had actually played techno to me on the way there. She was my girlfriend at the time. There was this Paris adventure. And we went spontaneously from London to Paris for a weekend. And she showed techno on her, on my phone to this appointment. I confessed that I'm more into this kind of EDM, big drops, big lyrics. Music, I was like, oh, it's a bit boring. But then the Monday after, I was like, oh my God, I mean, I'm not high. I still like it. Then on Tuesday, I still liked it. And then Wednesday, I still liked it. And I liked it even more every day. And I really got into it. So it can help you understand it if you're not yet. So maybe we should arrange something there, Samuel, when we go to maybe Berlin together. But
do you want to go to Berlin?
I have not. I'm aiming to go this August.
Are you going this August?
Or potentially. I mean, let's see. This August, next year. Africa was such a good experience that I'm not considering to go last minute. Right? Well, if like OMG sales coming up, right? It's not impossible. But In any case, I really love progressive music now. I love it even much more than all the other genres. It's so funny, and I don't have to take anything, for sure. It's fun, but just like with balance of how much do we enjoy the moment versus how much do we plan the future, substances, right? It's a big topic, and well, I want to caveat all of this. You can ask me anything, Samuel. I might not answer, but but I would answer this. I want to be very clear, it fucks people up. It rules lives, right? And people just lose it. And let's take MDMA, which really that kind of start in it's the main substance in ecstasy pills, and it starts aggressively emitting serotonin in your brain, and it makes you really happy. And if you think you were happy when, I don't know, someone asked to marry you or your child was born, all of that, well, you weren't that happy. Not like,
it's a beauty level.
It's a different level. It's like it's not natural to be this happy, right? And it's and that might be off putting a lot of people who has been like, oh, well, then you always want that high, and yeah, it's a risk because it's not physically addictive as alcohol is, right? Funnily, like alcohol is much more physically addictive, but it's so psychologically addictive. People, and then because your kind of serotonin stores in your brain are empty. And it doesn't work as well. So you have to take more, and people just start taking it every month and then every weekend. It's
very dangerous.
It's a slippery slope. And I have a Notion spreadsheet of when I take what and like making sure that there are the recommended breaks in between. And so it's very, very important to be super careful that you don't end up slipping slowly into very dangerous habits. So that's one thing. On the first day of Africa, we took MDMA, which was very fun. But then what a whole other thing, a whole other topic is really for me psychedelics. I think that they much better even match this spirit of a burn. And I think psychedelics are something that on the one hand, it's well understood this use of therapy, and psychologists know that it's not just a bad thing, it's not just a dangerous drug, but it can actually be quite helpful. And even in Germany, there's a legal magic mushroom retreat. They have a clinical license and stuff. You can't buy it in a supermarket, but there you can get it legally in certain places. You can go to Amsterdam and buy truffles in a coffee shop.
And also,
but legally, right? And it's not like the Netherlands, it's like a completely broken country. So it's psychedelics is something quite different from MDMA, cocaine, alcohol, all these like things that are potentially much more dangerous. So we took an acid fab LSD on Saturday, and that was that was a really truly life-changing experience. And I've done psychedelics for the first time during the past year. I did a couple of times. I had some very deep mushroom experiences, and there's a lot of information out there how people really kind of, or it can be quite therapeutic. And I had some really negative and dark experiences trying magic mushrooms for the first time. I was kind of uncovering some really deep hurts and anxieties and fears. And it wasn't always a good experience throughout, but then the next day I was like, wow, that was like 20 therapy sessions at once. And the ride was like, that was crazy. And everything kind of somewhat culminated last Saturday when I was a bit apprehensive because the past few times I took psychedelics, I was kind of thrown into something quiet and dark and negative. I was like, do I want to go this deep? It's not necessarily a bad thing, right? It's like you have a therapy session, you cry and you think about something sad, and like working on your vulnerabilities could be good in the long run, but do I want this here right now? And we did take the LSD, and first of all, it makes you appreciate or the kind of randomness of the place, right? It makes you a bit mad. It makes you very free. It makes you kind of really silly. And if you see all these colors and you're like a child, and when you're saying wow here, like with like 10 times the significance you were wanting.
Yeah, you're just like,
things are impressive. Like, when you're on LSD, things that aren't really as impressive like become impressive. So it's like, let's say we're sitting here and then we're on LSD and you're like, and we should stand up and stretch. And I'm like, wow. So now imagine a place that is truly one, right? You're like, you were standing on top of the, we were standing on top of the tree of stories as the LSD was kicking in. And we were looking at, as they were preparing the burn of the heart. There's this big heart artwork, and they were starting to burn it down.
Yeah, I have a nice photo.
We were putting some B-roll that I thought your B-roll, someone else's. The sunset in the background, beautiful colors everywhere, people wearing gorgeous costumes, everything's a bit random, a bit silly, and you're just like, wow. It's the LSD helps, it just develops a huge amplifier. And what would have been a magical memory already is like a 10 times as magical memory for me. It's really like, I this moment is so present in my brain now. And even though it stays with you, it's not just like you're having fun. It's like, it's really deep. And then we kind of in progress to it, and we met some people, and we and then the next stage was this. We went to the burn of the clan, and it was an incredible ceremony. Everyone sits down in this huge circle around the clan symbol of Africa burn. It's a huge wooden construction, and then they do this kind of drums, and they start rhythmically dancing, and these kind of like fire shows, and it's kind of very tribal. And then they set the thing on fire, and I was there, and it was like high on acid, and I started feeling so light, almost out of body, and I kind of was like coming to this point of resolution of kind of fears and anxieties I had worked on previous psychedelic experiences, and they kind of started to resolve in a really positive way. So it was a great time for me, and I was starting to feel really light, and this whole atmosphere made me extremely euphoric. And then with the funny thing that we kind of hinted at is that people, which I had seen earlier but not really understood, start taking their clothes off. It was kind of like the ultimate step of freedom, the ultimate step of back to the roots, be it like a child or like a tribal warrior, whatever, right? And they in this already crazy place, the people take off their crazy costumes and they start running and cheering and running around the fire.
But naked. And
we did. And we took our clothes off. And we were suddenly, and you feel weird if you run around naked through a shopping mall, but you do not feel as weird if you imagine like family. Listen, an African tribe, and they all run around naked around the fire. You wouldn't be like, oh, this person's weird. And it felt like that, right? We were all like naked, we were running around the fire, and I was kind of, there was this almost carnal energy, I just felt being otherwise so immersed in this highly structured and constructed society and pursuing all these fancy careers that are so removed from our origins and animal creatures.
Yeah.
I was for this one moment so back to the roots. And I was like, they're all human animals around me, and we're having this connection. We don't even know each other. We might not even speak the same language, but we speak this animal language. We're kind of like, our bodies are the same, built the same, so we are like same blood and flesh, and it was an amazing feeling. And sure, you could also zoom out and be like, oh, a bunch of high people running around a fire, taking a close up. But I'm telling you, it was an incredible, magical experience. It was a state of mind. To have experienced that is something I'm taking with me. And I'm taking with me, and I'm going to go to Cambridge Maybole's and
take up your phones and put us in love.
Hopefully not, because hopefully I won't be actually there, because it wouldn't be respectful, it wouldn't be appropriate. But, well, you know what? Like, it's just as humans in our fancy offices and fancy suits and pursuing all these fancy careers, we sometimes forget where it comes from, forget these simple pleasures and living in the moment, which I didn't. This is spectrum, and not everyone has to run around the fire naked in Africa and be high on LSD. I'm not.
You're not from West Side Channel.
That's the far end of being present in the moment. You don't have to be as present, but there is a certain beauty in being able to experience that and not losing sight of us. Just like, I'm an animal, you're an animal. We're like, we decide to, like, we have all this kind of thousands of years of culture, society, and like expectations and all of that. But being able to fall back to where, for most of human history, like past 300,000 years, what we've mostly been doing, falling back to that is very freeing, it's very relieving, and it kind of gives you a new perspective when you are stressed. When I go, this isn't going well, and my startup, and like my career, and my company, and my boss, we're like, well, in the end, it's all a bit of a game, and we all like a bit of like there's something deeper and more original than that. And then you can go on, and you can go and build cathedrals, which is clearly is human nature too, is to build big halls and to compose symphonies to be played in them, and all that is part of mankind as well. And I'm not saying we all have to live like tribal warriors in Africa, but not losing sight of either end of the spectrum, I think it's helpful. It helped me, and I might do it again. So meet me at the Bell of the Can in Africa. But it was a great experience. I think it's something that people might not have enough in their lives in some shape or form. It doesn't have to be this exact thing, but kind of appreciating the simple, raw human pleasures, and not solely being immersed in a lifestyle that is so unnatural in a way. And I think it can be recommended.
You think it would be as possible to enjoy the whole world, like, without taking a single drop of alcohol or a drug?
Definitely. It's definitely possible. And again, these are amplifiers, right? And they are...
Because I don't take anything. Nothing.
And I'm sure you had a great time. And I think the bigger impact would be not having your fall, not being a vlogger, not having a drug, not having to worry. Probably will make a bigger change. And substances kind of force this upon you. You're not going to be planning the next chapter of your vlog on LSD. I do think psychedelics can be helpful. I do think they can be therapeutic. I do think they can make you more present.
If used correct. Because they are dangerous.
They can be extremely dangerous and help you so free that you're just mad all the talent. You're no longer able to function out there in the less free, more normal world.
Yeah.
And that's definitely a risk, so you have to manage it extremely carefully. They can be a useful amplifier, but in the end of the day, of course, you don't need it. And you can be very free and very open and very present without it. And I would love to go to a burn and do like a completely sober burn.
I've been out for that.
I'm sure it's going to happen. I'm going to do definitely some detoxing this month. Not tonight, because Alexander's making wonderful gin tonics, but and we're in South Africa, so we're kind of obliged to eat again, or I'm flying to Dubai, where all of this is like 20 years of prison. So I'm not going to risk that, but... soon I'm going to be detoxing completely. I'm probably not going to even have caffeine for a month. And then there'll be periods of my life where I'll be detoxing a lot. probably eventually if I get children, right? I mean, I like this idea of like, you know, women are kind of forced to be cooks. It's unreasonable. Becoming mother. And I think about when becoming a father, it's a real thing. Just do this. Because you're not going to do it later, right? It's so rare that people do like a full detox for like a year. So, and then there might be times where I go to burn and not even have a sip of alcohol in my feet. And that's great. And I'm sure it's going to feel good in its own regard. But I do think that alcohol is underestimated in our society.
Really bad.
And psychedelics. I think you being scientific, and I think you should look into the literature and see if it really would have such a negative impact on our bodybuilding career or your career. And
probably it's less bad.
Maybe a bunch of mushrooms. Included in Amsterdam or in Berlin, they sell more mushroom chocolate in the kiosks in Berlin than some of them. Might even remove sort of the stress and burn.
I think the reason why I don't want to try anything else is because I just had one very, very, very horrible experience with marijuana. Apparently, an allergic reaction to it.
Wow.
And since that moment, I said I never ever want to do this again.
Wow.
Even though, you know, for some other drugs.
I have to say some of my worst experiences were on weed as well, especially edibles. Because these days, those muffins, they are so strong. And then they can make you so paranoid, but I react quite strongly to it sometimes.
Oh, yeah. It can be
100%.
Yeah. So thanks so much for this discussion. This is a very new perspective I got on all of these drugs. I mean, obviously you're not promoting anything.
I do kind of sound like I'm promoting. But no, guys, I mean, honestly, I am maybe, I'm quite unfiltered here, because it's not my channel.
Virus kid.
No, but I'm quite unfiltered here. And I'm sure there'll be people be like, how can you make that sound so harmless? And again, I know so many people who lost it completely and their definitely lives being ruined. But do not be tempted to put everything into just one bucket.
Yeah.
And I feel like we have this very, very silly and random label of drugs and then alcohol as not a drug and then even cigarettes as not a drug, which is just absurd because it's like the worst drug ever, right? Yeah. It doesn't even get you hot.
No,
but someone offers me to smoke, I'm always like, is it weed or tobacco? And if it's tobacco, I'm not going to smoke it, you see, because it doesn't get me high and might cause cancer. So it's like,
it's bad.
Two bad things. At once. No, it's not worth it. And I would stay away from coke, and I would. It's not like I'm staying people to do heroin or these kind of things. But it's very random how we are grouping up. Some countries, and then somewhere you can do an ayahuasca retreat legally, and then here you can drink alcohol. Or not here, but in Germany you can drink alcohol from age 16. But then. You can still not smoke weed, or the silly is going to be changed. It's so rare.
Figured it out.
And our mindset is so just following that tradition. Yeah. And that all is so unscientific, how people think about it. So do your own research, and it's pretty difficult to make the case that even LSD is worse than alcohol. I'm sorry, it's pretty difficult to make that case scientifically. So if you're a heavy alcohol drinker, if you're not there, but if you're a heavy alcohol drinker, bye. Yeah. Why? Just because that's the way we've done it. And I do think that's a bit silly.
Yeah.
And even just people say a bit of...
People, they say, you know, one glass of alcohol or wine at dinner or a beer a day, it doesn't really matter. But you know what? It does that.
Oh, it's a Ramsey blocker. You will learn less. You will...
Muscle generation is completely stopped.
Yeah.
If I work out and I didn't have a beer after that, basically that workout went to waste. It's that bad. People sometimes don't even think about how bad it was for your, you know, regeneration of your body. So it's an effect that people really underestimate. And I really recommend people to cut down alcohol as much as possible. Also, don't encourage anyone to, you know, try out all the different drugs. I mean, sure, if you read the literature, you know you're a very disciplined person, then I think it's something that makes sense to think about. But if you're struggling to keep your life under control or have difficulties with discipline, I'd always say, like, stay away from that because it's a risk.
In the end, you want to maximize your happiness.
Yeah.
Some people jump out of airplanes, you say, oh, that's
Perhaps they're not.
Some people live in big cities, even though the countryside has much better air for your lungs. So you don't always go for the healthiest option. You don't always go for the most reasonable option because life might be pretty boring, and then you end up dying anyway. So it's not
life is deadly. It's
just not life is extremely deadly. So each to their own, and hopefully I will also not lose completely and then go completely mad. But I will regularly be going mad for a week at least. Because that is just such a freeing and wonderful experience, I'm telling you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being on podcast. I'm so glad that after 5 years we finally managed to meet in person. And yeah, we're going to have dinner all together now. Very fun time. Again, thanks so much for being here.
Such a pleasure.